years. More information is available at usm.maine.edu.
Blunt wishes to thank all the following sponsors and partners: the A.R. Gould School at Long Creek Youth Development Center, the Filene Foundation, Terrascope Youth Radio at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Youth Radio from Youth Media International in Oakland, California, and Blunt is also funded in part by a grant from the Maine Arts Commission, an independent state agency funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. The views expressed on Blunt are those of the individual speakers and producers, and not those of the University of Southern Maine or WMPG management. Blunt Youth Radio welcomes opposing views.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to die for them too. Especially the weather.
Hello and welcome to Blunt Youth Radio.
Blunt is an award-winning youth radio show, bringing you an hour of live news and public affairs every morning, evening.
Tonight we will be discussing North Korea and our relations with it.
In the first half of the show, one woman's story of her escape from North Korea, courtesy of TED Talks.
In addition, we'll be talking to Mira Kaushik of LINK, an organization that helps rescue people from North Korea.
During the second half of the show, we will talk to Guy Taylor, a correspondent for the Washington Times.
In his position of State Department correspondent, Taylor covers events in North Korea, among other things. Don't forget that Blunt is a call-in show. Our number is 207-780-4909.
Again, that's 207-780-4909. You can also listen to us online at WMPG.org.
I'm Leo Hilton, and I'd like to welcome my co-host,
Junichi Shioya.
Jun is our intern from Japan, and I'd like to welcome him to his first time on the air.
Yes.
So, first up on the show, we're going to be talking to Mira Kaushik, and she is a nomad or a traveling representative of LINK, which is short for Liberty in North Korea, and she tours around to various events around the country and shows their new documentary film. Mira is currently a student at the University of Wales in Sydney. But first, we're going to be listening to a clip of a TED Talk. TED Talks is a daily podcast of the best performances from the TED Conference, where the world's leading thinkers and doers give the talk of their lives in 18 minutes. This piece is from one woman named Hyunseo Lee, and it tells her story.
The white gap between North and South. We are all Korean, but inside we have become very different due to 67 years of division. I even went through an identity crisis. Am I South Korean or North Korean? Where am I from? Who am I? Sadly, there was no country I could proudly call my own. Even though adjusting to life in South Korea was not easy, but I made a plan. I started studying for university entrance exam. Just as I was starting to get used to my new life, I received a shocking phone call. The North Korean authorities intercepted some money that I sent to my family, and as a punishment, my family was going to be forcibly removed to a desolate location in the countryside. They had to get out quickly, so I started planning how to help them escape. North Koreans have to tread incredible distances on the path to freedom. It's almost impossible to cross the border between North Korea and South Korea. So ironically, I took a flight back to China and I had to hold North Korean border. Since my family couldn't speak Chinese, I had to guide them. Somehow through more than 2,000 miles in China and then into Southeast Asia. The journey by bus took 1 week and we were almost caught several times. One time our bus was stopped and boarded by a Chinese police officer. He took everyone's ID cards and he started asking them questions. Since my family couldn't understand Chinese, so I thought my family was going to be arrested. As the Chinese officer approached my family, I impulsively stood up and I told him that these are deaf and dumb people that I was chaperoning. He looked at me with suspiciously, but luckily he believed me. We made it all the way to the border of Laos, but I had to spend almost all of my money to bribe the border guards in Laos. But even after we got past the border, my family was arrested and jailed for illegal border crossing. After I paid the fine and bribe, my family was released in 1 month. But soon after, my family was arrested and jailed again in the capital of Laos. This was one of the lowest points in my life. I did everything to get my family get to freedom, and we came so close. But my family was thrown in a jail just a short distance from the South Korean embassy. I went back and forth between the immigration office and the police station, desperately trying to get my family out. But I didn't have enough money to pay bribe or fine anymore. I lost all hope. At the moment, I heard one man's voice ask me, "What's wrong?" I was so surprised that a total stranger cared enough to ask. In my broken English and with a dictionary, I explained the situation, and without hesitating, the man went to the ATM and he paid the rest of money for my family and two other North Koreans to get out of jail. I thanked him with all my heart and I asked him, "Why are you helping me?" "I'm not helping you," he said. "I'm helping North Korean people." I realized that this was a symbolic moment in my life. The kind stranger symbolized new hope for me and the North Korean people when we needed it most. And he showed me the kindness of strangers and the support of the international community are truly the rays of hope when North Korean people need.
Welcome back to Blunt. I'd like to just reintro the show. My name is Leo Hilton.
And my name is Jerry Syria.
And tonight we're talking about North Korea. And I'd like to welcome our first guest. Her name is Mira Kaushik, and she works with an organization called LINK, or Liberty in North Korea. Mira, are you on the line?
I am. Hi.
Hi, Mira. Hi. So you're a nomad, and you talk about, or you go and you show the movie at different places. So can you talk a little bit about, does this story seem similar to stories that you've heard, you know, working with the organization?
It does. A lot of North Korean refugees do have an immensely tough time trying to get out of North Korea firstly and then trying to get to safety. So what our organization does is try and provide them with a really safe way to get to safety from North Korea.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'd just like to tell our audience again that last video was a clip from TED Talks, and the woman's name was Hina Seo Lee. Can you tell us a little bit about the documentary that you're touring around?
Sure. The documentary is called Danny from North Korea, and it features one of the first refugees that LINK helped to rescue back in 2006. So Danny escaped from North Korea in 2005. He was looking for his mother and looking for food, and then he found LINK in China once he crossed the river, and the documentary sort of goes over his life in North Korea, his escape to China, and his eventual resettlement in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So it's not, but the idea with the film is that it helps to raise awareness of the issue and the need for support to help more people do what Danny did.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So what the documentary tries to do is put a human face to the North Korean issue, because basically what we see in the media is very politicized, and so people don't really consider the North Korean people. So what we're doing is giving them a human story, a relatable person to sort of look at and say, wow, this is an actual person who's suffering under this race. Here's some way that I can help. So that's sort of the purpose behind the documentary. Danny wants to share his story because he believes that by having more people aware of what's going on in North Korea, there will be more done to change the situation.
So can you tell us more about why it is that maybe, you know, we don't see the North Koreans as a people and maybe just as a nation? Is that because of the media and the way that they're showing us them, or is it something different?
Yeah, exactly. It's public perception of North Korea is highly shaped by the media. And because the media focuses on the threat that North Korea poses to the rest of the world in terms of its nuclear tests, and nuclear weapons, that's what the media focuses on. So that is what the rest of the world also focuses on.
Mm-hmm.
But the media fails to recognize a lot of the time that people are starving, people are sent to political prison camps for any sort of treasonous transgression. And those are the sorts of details that should be getting out. But because North Korea is such a closed-off society and does pose themselves to be such a threat through their nuclear program, that's what the media focuses on, and that's what the public also considers to be the extent of the North Korean issue. But the reality is there's so much more to it.
All right, so we're just going to go and quickly listen to one piece from the Link website. The piece is called Shift is Happening in North Korea, and when we get back, we'll talk with Mira about the piece.
Perception is an invisible force, one that lives in our minds. But the effect of our perceptions are anything but invisible, since they determine what we think, say, and how we act. In this way, this invisible force of perception has influenced the course of history. In the 18th century, we believed that Africans were less than human, and we made them slaves and denied their human rights. Our perceptions were wrong. They were based on lies, and innocent people paid the price. In the 20th century, we failed to respond to the plight of millions of people because international politics and the media defined North Korea by high politics rather than the North Korean people. Our perception was determined by the political rhetoric of the Cold War and has been that way ever since.
North Korea is a regime arming with missiles and weapons of mass destruction. States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world.
If you live in North Korea, the big news you would have learned today is you have a new first lady. Put it another way, Kim Jong-un is off the market.
This perception has allowed the atrocities of the regime to go unnoticed. While we are talking about nuclear weapons and treating the Kim leadership as tabloid news, the North Korean people are starving, isolated, and denied fundamental human rights in a zero-tolerance system enforced by a network of political prison camps reminiscent of Nazi concentration camps. The regime aims to isolate its people by trying to control all information going into and out of the country and punishes anyone who attempts to learn about the outside world. This is not history. These are the incredible challenges that the North Korean people face today. But the world has neglected this, instead allowing politics to define North Korea. In order to survive, the North Korean people have created illegal markets to provide themselves and others with food and goods that the government can no longer supply. These markets have undermined the power of the regime and are also serving as hubs for the spread of new information and technologies like DVDs and cell phones, which are modernizing and opening up North Korean society from below. Together, these people-driven events are spreading new ideas and creating new pressures for change, challenging the regime's ability to keep the people isolated. Shift is happening in North Korea. This is what we should be talking about. This is what the media should be reporting on, and this is what politicians should be focused on. Why? Because more attention on the nuclear weapons stalemate or the North Korean regime is not going to lead to solutions. Shifting the way the public thinks about North Korea allows for far more progress to be made. The North Korean people can be supported. We can help empower their efforts to push for change and increasing freedoms. And their stories can be told wide and far until North Korea is defined by its people. If we, in the outside world, shift our focus from the high politics to the people and come alongside them in their struggle, then liberty in North Korea will not be impossible. It will be inevitable.
So, after listening to that piece, my one question is, what is the goal? What is the end game of liberty in North Korea? What's the purpose?
Mm-hmm. So, basically, what we want to do is empower the North Korean people to push for change for themselves and to be able to make their own decisions. So, in the short term, we're doing that by sort of rescuing refugees and having them send information back in and tell their family and friends back in North Korea about what's happening outside so that they're inspired, you know, there's a world outside what they're suffering in North Korea, and that inspires them to push for change. But our ultimate goal is to see the North Korean people able to make those decisions for themselves and be able to have the freedom to make those decisions. That's basically the goal for liberty in North Korea.
And so if you're listening to the radio right now, they're actually showing Danny's story at Southern Maine Community College at 5 p.m. on the 7th. So you should go check that out. I'm sure it's going to be very interesting.
The situation is getting worse, in your view?
Excuse me?
The situation of North Korea is getting worse. Technology development has no effect on it.
Is the situation in North Korea getting worse?
Yeah.
It's hard to say. There's been a lot of attention on North Korea recently because of the nuclear tests and a recent sort of high-profile visit by Dennis Rodman. But what's really going on is that the sanctions being put against North Korea are not really impacting the regime. They're impacting the people. Mm-hmm. It's detrimental mm-hmm. to the people. So, in that case, yes. Mm-hmm. Things in North Korea are getting worse because fewer resources are getting to the people and they're not able to live a sort of safe life, especially under the new leadership.
So we have a phone call from a Blunt member, Felix Pieski. Are you on the line?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, Felix.
I have a question about how much we can actually expect the media to accurately portray North Korea now. As Americans, we kind of think of the North Korean media as full of censorship and lies. How much can we believe that we're being reported on?
Mm-hmm. We've seen actually over the last couple of years that there has been an increase in the number of stories about North Koreans in the U.S. media. So, last year there was an article in the LA Times that spoke about the living conditions in North Korea. We've seen a special on Shin Dong, who was a political prisoner from North Korea who escaped and is now testifying in front of the European Parliament about his experiences in the prison camps in North Korea. So there are a lot of stories coming out. Reddit did an AMA quite recently with a North Korean defector, and those are the sorts of stories the media doesn't
have, like, control over.
Sure, but...
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's very interesting. I like the show a lot.
Thank you, Felix.
Have a nice night.
All right. Okay. So we're going to play a quick trailer to the documentary, and we'll be back in a minute or two.
Every year, thousands of North Koreans make the dangerous journey across the border to escape oppression and poverty. In March 2005, I was one of them. Hello, my name is Danny, and I'm from North Korea. Right now, I'm in South Korea filming a documentary about my life because I want to share my story. Book a screening with the link and help introduce me to your community and hear my story.
We're going to see like North Korean view, but we're at DMZ right now.
Is that crazy? Look in North Korea?
Yeah.
First time?
That's my first time.
Alright, we're back, and you're listening to Blunt Youth Radio. My name is Leo Hilton, and I'm joined by...
Jun Shiryeop.
And tonight we're discussing North Korea. I'd like to remind everybody that Blunt is a call-in show, and our number is 780-4909. That's 207-780-4909 if you want to call in with a question or comment and ask about North Korea, because that's what we're talking about.
May I ask about the condition of prison camp?
So we're wondering if you can tell us a little bit more, like, what we know about the conditions in the prison camps.
The conditions in the prison camps?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we know that people are treated extremely harshly in political prison camps, forced to work hours and upon hours on end without being fed, without having a proper place to live. It's filthy. It's comparable to Nazi concentration camps. That is the comparison given by North Korean defectors who have experienced time in the prison camps. So definitely not a pleasant place to spend any time at all.
And do we have any idea how many people are living in these prison camps?
Mm-hmm. So we estimate between 150 to 200,000 people are living in those camps.
So that's a major percentage of the North Korean population. That's,
well, yeah, there are 24 million North Koreans, and up to 200,000 of them are in these camps.
Wow. It's startling. You know, it's not something we ever hear about because it's, you know, whenever North Korea is in the media, it's not the people, it's not the conditions of the country, it's the threat that they pose.
Sorry?
Yeah, I have heard a lot of rumor about the stabbing of people in Japan, and I want to know that there is a cannibalism of the people. Is that true?
Those are reports that have come out of North Korea. As to the truth of them, it's possible that is true.
Wow. So we're closing in on our break, and I'd just like to say, you know, we are a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909 if you have a question or a comment and you want to call in and ask us about North Korea. On the line we have Mira Kaushik, and she's with the Liberation of North Korea, and Liberty in North Korea, or LINK, and She is a nomad, which is a traveling representative of the program, and they're touring around showing their new movie about Danny, who is a defector from North Korea.
May I ask one more question? What is necessary, in your view, for helping, for changing the situation, current situation? What is the most necessary to change the situation of North Korean?
Sorry, what was the best?
Yeah.
Best strategy?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we've sort of seen from the last 60 years that everybody has been pursuing a top-down approach when it comes to North Korea, and that has left the issue at stalemate. So what our organization believes is that at this point in time, change is going to come from a grassroots level. So change is going to come from the bottom up, and people in North Korea are going to be able to make that change for themselves. So that's definitely what we're pushing to be the best solution here.
It will take a time.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us, Mira.
Okay, thank you for having me.
So you've been listening to Blunt Youth Radio. You can tune back in a couple of minutes, or stay tuned in and join us in a couple of minutes when we'll be talking with Guy Taylor from the Washington Times about North Korea and maybe more the political situation there. My name's Leo Hilton.
And Jun Chishoya.
And stay tuned in.
And now for the weather.
Tonight, a 20% chance of showers before 9 p.m. Cloudy during the early evening, then gradually clearing, with a low around 26, west wind around 16 miles per hour.
And Tuesday will be mostly sunny with a high near 41. Breezy with a west wind 14 to 21 miles per hour with gusts as high as 32 miles per hour.
Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 25, west wind 9 to 11 miles per hour.
And you are listening to WMPG and W281AC Gorham, Portland, Southern Maine Community Radio from the University of Southern Maine.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. 낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자, 커피 한 잔에 여유를 아는 품격 있는 여자, 밤이 오면 심장이 뜨거워지는 여자, 그런 반전 있는 여자. 너는 선호해. 낮에는 너만큼 따사로운 그런 선호해. 커피 식기도 전에 원샷 때리는 선호해. 밤이 오면 심장이 터져버리는 선호해. 그런 선호해. 아름다워 사랑스러워 그래 너 hey. 그래 바로 너 hey. 아름다워 사랑스러워 그래 너 hey. 그래 바로 너 hey. 지금부터 갈 때까지 가볼까 오빤 강남 스타일 이때다 싶으면 묶었던 머리 푸는 여자 가렸지만 웬만한 노출보다 야한 여자 그런 감각적인 여자 나는 선호해 점잖아 보이지만 놀 땐 노는 선호해 때가 되면 완전 미쳐버리는 선호해 근육보다 사상이 울퉁불퉁한 선호해 그런 선호해 오빤 강남 스타일 강남 스타일 옵, 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 옵 오빤 강남 스타일 강남 스타일 옵, 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 옵 오빤 강남 스타일 에이, 섹시 레이디 옵, 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 옵 오빤 강남 스타일 나는 뭘 좀 아는 놈 뛰는 놈 그 위에 나는 놈 baby baby 나는 뭘 좀 아는 놈 You know what I'm saying 오빤 강남 스타일 오빤 강남 스타일
I don't know what they're talking about.
No.
Oh. Welcome back. You're listening to Blunt Youth Radio. My name is Leo Hilton.
And Jin Choya. Thank you for South Korea's music.
And, tonight we're talking about North Korea, and I'd like to do a shout out to Dale Doss for hooking us up with our last guest, and he is with SMCC, and they are showing Danny from North Korea on Sunday the 7th.
Hi.
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 Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, hi. Is this Dale?
Yeah, it's me. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Dale?
Hey, thanks.
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
So do you want to talk a little bit, or just for a minute, about the showing on Sunday?
Yeah, definitely. The documentary is, the whole night is going to be from 5 p.m. to 6:30, and the documentary is going to be about a half hour with about a half hour or so, too, of Q&A. And basically, it's what Mira explained the documentary is about. It is about a very young man named Danny who left North Korea in 2005 to defect to China. And the entire film shows his adjustment to modern civilization. Now, the one most profound thing about the film is that we all know that North Korea is incredibly cut off from the world. And mm-hmm. seeing this person get adjusted into modern times and really feel the wonder of, you know, modern day technology and all these things is very interesting to watch. And it really illustrates the human rights crisis going on in North Korea right now.
Mm-hmm. And what time are you showing the movie?
The time is it begins at 5 p.m. and it ends at 6:30.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Dale.
Anytime, definitely.
Great. So I'd like to remind all of our listeners that Blunt is a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And tonight we're talking about North Korea, and we just talked to Dale Doss from SMCC, and they're showing Danny from North Korea Sunday at 5 o'clock. So that's something that, you know, if you're in the area, you should definitely go and check out. Should be very, very interesting. Unfortunately, it seems like our guest isn't able to join us right now, so we'll try to get our next guest, Guy Taylor, on the line, but for now, he's not there. So we're going to listen to a piece from Global Ethics Corner entitled, "Will China Finally Turn the Corner on North Korea?" Oh, okay, never mind. We're going to wait a minute to listen to the Global Ethics Corner piece. But for now, I'm Leo Hilton.
And James Shoya from Japan.
And so, you know, thinking about North Korea and the situation today, I mean, I feel like it's been, you know, in the news a lot, and it's a little bit scary, and I feel like sometimes the news outlets are playing on our fear a little bit to, you know, to get our viewership. Do you see where I'm coming from, June?
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder, I mean, you come from Japan. In Japan, is it even more, is there more fear because of the proximity of the two countries?
Yeah. I believe Japan is included in the reach of North Korea's weapon, and the Japanese government assume they have a chemical weapon, not only nuclear weapon. So it's very scary for Japan.
But from your own perspective, when you're living in Japan, is that threat very real, or does it sometimes feel like it's very far away?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, Japanese defending system is depending on the United States mm-hmm. Army. Thank you. So the ordinary people is not so concerned about it exactly in daily life. Mm-hmm. But some of Japanese has been kidnapped by North Korean army, so it's a very delicate problem for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree. Okay, so now we're going to listen to the piece from Global Ethics Corner, and it's called "Will China Finally Turn the Corner on North Korea?"
Global Ethics Corner from the Carnegie Council.
The military dictatorship of North Korea is once again threatening to attack South Korea and the United States, who have been pushing for renewed sanctions against Pyongyang for its nuclear ambitions. The impoverished North Korean regime has long relied on its close alliance with the People's Republic of China to minimize the impact of such sanctions. This alliance was cemented during the Korean War, in which North Koreans and Chinese fought side by side. Since the conflict ended in 1953, China has at times used its seat on the UN Security Council to interfere with proposed sanctions and actively helped North Korea circumvent punishment. However, Beijing may finally have had enough of Pyongyang's antics. A recent North Korean nuclear test triggered a unanimous vote in the Security Council to impose new sanctions and tighten current measures. This vote could indicate that Beijing's political calculus has changed. As Dartmouth professor Elizabeth Lind has noted, while North Korea is essentially the same country it was in 1953, China has moved on. In 1953, the newly established People's Republic was a fragile and inward-looking state. But now China is much more open, and its fast-growing economy is the second largest in the world. So why have the Chinese stuck with North Korea for so long? Many fear a humanitarian crisis on China's doorstep if the Kim regime collapses or is overthrown. Geopolitically, many believe that China benefits from the distraction created by North Korea. Moreover, recent media reports indicate that popular support of the North Korean regime remains high among ordinary Chinese citizens. As relations between North Korea and the rest of the world once again deteriorate, pressure may mount on China to deal definitively with its troublesome ally. What do you think? Has China finally had enough of Pyongyang's posturing? Or will Beijing once again ride to North Korea's rescue? I'm Terrence Hurley of Carnegie Council.
So first off, thank you to PRX and to the Global Ethics Corner for that piece. And finally, we have our guest, Guy Taylor, on the line. Guy, thank you for joining us.
Okay.
Hi, so to start off, you work for the Washington Times as a State Department correspondent. Taylor's a graduate of Clark University, and he spent over 5 years with the Times reporting on foreign affairs. He's received support from his work, for his freelance work, from the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting and from the Fund for Investigative Journalism. In his position of State Department correspondent, Taylor covers events in North Korea, among other things. So we invited him today to discuss with us events in North Korea. So just to start off, can you describe the current tensions a little bit between North Korea and its neighbors?
Hi, how are you? Yes.
Thank you for joining.
We're live now, yeah?
Yes, we are.
Oh, great! Yeah. So, the thanks for having me. There's multi-pronged tension going on because it's not just North Korea and the United States. It's as it gets portrayed in our media here in America. It's very much the relationship that North Korea has with Japan and China, as well as South Korea to the south, which, you know, history students will know that North and South Korea were one country in the last century and then during World War II. So, and then also all the little countries around, particularly Vietnam, where the United States was very invested militarily in the 1960s and early 70s. So to understand the scope of the tensions, I think you got to realize that this kind of unique government that's in place in North Korea is communicating and trying to have interactions with all these other countries right in the region. And then you have the United States, which has its interests in the region, which probably are dominated more than anything else by trade with the smaller countries, but specifically trade with China.
Right.
So there's a lot of layers to kind of figure it out. And this is one of the reasons why it's such a complicated situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have one more question. Should people in the United States be concerned about the situation in North Korea? It's very far away.
Be concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I think absolutely. I mean, I don't think that the people in the United States should be concerned that there's about to be a war, per se. Mm-hmm. I think that gets, you know, if you go and read headlines on the internet and in some newspapers, and you'll get a kind of a feel that there's this like impending sense of doom, that there's a war coming. I think that's kind of unrealistic, but I definitely think that people should be concerned that you've got a country in North Korea with a very young leader right now. The Kim Jong-un is 28 or 29 years old.
Wow.
He's the youngest head of state of a nuclear-armed nation. So, you know, it's unpredictable what he's going to say and what he's going to do. And it's unpredictable. So you've got a lot of older guys that are around him in the military in North Korea, and it's somewhat unpredictable. For that reason, I think people should be concerned, but I don't want to... I think also we should be concerned about what Chinese government's reaction to North Korea is going to be, because China is in a place right now politically that's very different from where it's really ever been in the last century. And the Chinese government is trying to figure out a way to be a leader in the region, but also to, show its power. So, you know, the possibility that there could be a military conflict in Greater Asia or in Southeast Asia that kind of erupted out of the unusual government that is in North Korea, it's probably a higher possibility now than it's been in recent years. But I don't think that we're really, like, on the precipice of war. I think that's a lot of that has to do with the storytelling and just the way that information moves, that the English language media is very much describing it as if, you know, the bubble is about to burst, so to speak.
So you talked a little bit about China's relationship with North Korea, and China is sort of their major ally in the entire world. What are some of China's priorities regarding North Korea, and what do you think their stance is going to be in the next
question.
Couple of years?
I mean, this is the million-dollar question.
Right.
You know, why would the Chinese want to support a government that is a destabilizer?
Right.
You know, that's a great question. It's like, why wouldn't the Chinese just sort of side with everybody else and say, well, if they've got influence over North Korea, let's put some pressure on this young government and kind of get them to come to the peace table, so to speak. I think it's really in the interest of the Chinese government to try and inspire unity in China behind the Chinese government. And one of the ways you can do that is to kind of align yourself with potentially confusing things in the region. One of these is North Korea. I mean, the Chinese government, by being portrayed in the Chinese state media, as well as the English language media, and it's debatable how much access that average Chinese citizens have to the English language media, but the Chinese government, you know, has an interest in appearing as if it's a great influencer in the region, because that inspires confidence within the Chinese people. I also think that the Chinese government has an interest in being able to pull a lever as an agitator to Washington in the region, because the government in the United States very much wants to exploit different resources in Southeast Asia as well as markets. I know, you know, depending on the audience here, some of this is kind of conceptual, but, you know, so the Chinese really want to be able to take a stand of their own, an independent position of leadership in Southeast Asia. So if Washington's position is, well, the North Koreans are out of control, everybody should be in line and pressuring them to get their nuclear program on the table and come to a peace deal with the South Koreans, then, you know, the Chinese government is not necessarily going to want to sit down and say, well, yeah, we just agree and we're going to be pushed over by the Americans, because the Chinese people will perceive that and say, well, is our government weak? You know, that's not a good thing. So I hope I'm explaining this a little bit. I mean, there's complexity here, but there is an interest in the Chinese, in the leadership in Beijing, to be an adversary, to sing its own tune and not be pushed around by Europe or the United States.
Mm-hmm. So, what about the relationship between Japan and North Korea? I mean, Jun here is from Japan, so we have an interesting perspective here, but they're, you know, very close neighbors, and for, you know, almost all of history have sort of been at, you know, at arms towards each other.
Sure.
You know, and the Japanese...
You know, this is something, man, I've been trying to figure this out as a student of foreign affairs, which you guys are as well. Mm-hmm. It just, the best thing for me as a kind of a English, Irish, Scottish, Italian, American, is to think about ethnicity. And mm-hmm. to, like, when I look into my own family, I see that the English and the Irish haven't always really gotten along.
Right.
You know? And in fact, they've come to war in my own lifetime, mm-hmm. probably just a few years before yours. So there's a lot of, like, ethnic tension going on between the Koreans and the Japanese. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether we're talking South Koreans, North Koreans, and, yeah. and the Japanese. And the way for us over here, and you guys on the show, I didn't hear what was talked about before I came on, but I mean, I think you can probably attest to this in your own family experiences, that there is this tension, and it's manifested itself a couple of times with historical events, such as World War II and its aftermath, mm-hmm. and then just the attempt for the Japanese to try and normalize relations, both with the South Koreans and with the North Koreans, and vice versa, for the North Koreans or the South Koreans to normalize relations with the Japanese, has been kind of carried this burden of ethnic tension the whole time. So I think there's a great interest right now for the Japanese as well as the Koreans economically to be banded together
right.
As an engine of industry and resources, and as well as creative economic growth, from computers to car manufacturing to aerospace, all these different industries that the whole world kind of relies on. In the same way, you have the same thing happening in Latin America with the difference, say, between like Brazil and mm-hmm. and Mexico. Totally different
yeah.
languages, but people very similar, and they're at a similar stage of economic development. So there's a great interest to be together, except there's also this ethnic and political drive to be unique. This goes back to this whole kind of concept that I was throwing out about the Irish versus the English. I mean, the Scottish are still trying to achieve independence from Britain. You know
right.
what I mean? So it's complicated, and hopefully I've thrown something out that adds a layer of context.
Mm-hmm. So what about North Korea in the long term? You know, what's our goal as a nation towards North Korea? And where do you think North Korea is headed?
Well, you know, it's another really good question. And let me first answer it just with the kind of from a conspiratorial bent. I mean,
uh-huh.
people would argue that, you know, the United States is an empire that is addicted to war and needs adversaries around the world. In that immediate sense, you have to wonder whether or not even the Obama administration, which is peaceful, peace-loving mm-hmm. administration, people will say, compared to the years of the Bush administration, that even the Obama administration would foster or allow for increased tensions with an adversary in the middle of Asia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we don't know how this is going to play out. You know, will we go to the brink of war? This is a great example of brinkmanship. I heard that term at some point in my own studies, and I thought, well, what does that mean, brinkmanship? It's when, you know, governments kind of like flirt with war again and again and again. So does it behoove the United States and does it behoove China to play with this brinkmanship? We're watching that play out right now. But really in the long term, for the interest of greater Asia and the interest of the United States, I think that the real desired outcome is to have some kind of peaceful dialogue between North and South Korea and South Korea and China and Japan and the United States, and this is what the Obama people at the White House here in Washington are trying to figure out, is how deeply to get involved to bring this outcome, is mm-hmm. that there would be some peaceful dialogue about the fact that North Korea is a nuclear-armed country. It has a unique and unusual, and compared to Western, so-called Western standards, a very difficult government, a very difficult relationship between its people and its government. But how is it that we can bring about some kind of a peaceful dialogue? Because when we look at this in the 50-year scheme, this whole discussion we're having This is not something that like, came up in the last 6 weeks.
No, of course
or
not.
Or the last 6 years. This is something that's been, you know, really in the forefront of the way that the nation states interact with each other. This has been an issue. North Korea's independence and its conflict, this has been like the last 60 years. And if you want to get into the ethnic stuff, we're talking about the last 600 years. So really, I think that what is the future for North Korea? You know, we've got a young, like I said, 28 or 29-year-old leader. Is this guy going to be in power in North Korea for the next 40, 50 years? You know, I think people need to pay attention and listen to where he's coming from. And the one way to do that is to try and encourage North Korea to get back to the negotiating table, to talk about what it's doing and what it's... Here's the big question. What does North Korea want,
right,
exactly? You know, what are they trying to achieve here? And then if you could come up with that question and a possible answer to that question, you could figure out, well, in response to that, what is it that the United States and China and Japan want? I know it's right. Kind of ranting, but hopefully it raises more questions for the discussion going forward.
I want to ask about a possibility of the revolution, because on their first half, we had discussed about the starving people and the very painful situation of the nation of North Korea. So I want to know if there is a possibility of the revolution or not. What do you
like
think
the
of
idea that there could be an Arab Spring type of development,
yeah,
in North Korea?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, okay, you know, I don't foresee that happening anytime soon. I think the North Korean state and intelligence apparatus is far too strong,
right,
and stabilized,
right,
for there to be an uprising. It's also, like, very possible, hard as it is for Americans to get their head around who are paying attention to this, it's entirely possible that Kim Jong-un and the so-called sort of royal political family in North Korea actually do enjoy a certain degree of popularity among a sector of the population in North Korea that goes beyond the elite sort of sphere of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that there is even an opposition uprising right now is totally unrealistic. So
right.
I don't foresee that happening. One interesting thought that I'm having about this, though, is that the way that the United States, there have been, you know, senior foreign policy professor and analysts and State Department type people, both in the starting really in the Reagan administration and then into Bush 1 and then throughout the Clinton administration, especially in the into Bush 2 and now in the Obama administration, there have been American foreign policy thinkers who've asked that same question and said, well, how could we possibly help foment some momentum within the opposition,
right,
within North Korea to overthrow this government so that there might not necessarily be a democratic outcome, but
mm-hmm.
there could be a change in the way that the country is governed, right?
Yeah.
And the way that goal or that way of thinking manifested itself was through this food aid diplomacy program, where
exactly.
the United States started to say, you know, look, the government is so screwed up, for lack of a better term, in North Korea, that there are people in sections of the country that are actually starving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we could, and the government of North Korea knows, you know, Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-un's father, knew that there were people starving. And the people and foreign policy experts in Washington knew that this was happening. And they knew that Kim Jong-il was not happy about this.
Yeah.
And needed,
so,
farming catastrophe in the country and needed help feeding his people. So the United States started to take this posture and say, well, I'll tell you what, if you'll come to the table and talk to us and make commitments on paper that you're not going to develop nuclear weapons.
All right.
And once, if you
so
have
I'm,
them, you're not...
I'm sorry that I have to cut you off right now, but we're coming to the end of our show,
ooh,
so thank you for joining us, Guy.
Absolutely.
Next up is Jazz, and join us next week on Blunt for our Begathon show. We need your money for WMPG to run. Thank you very much. My name's Leo Hilton.
And Gene Shuria.
Next up is Jazz. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening.